Hey friends, welcome to The Problem with Perfect. What is the problem with perfect? It's the myth that if we just do more, be more, and have more, our lives will be perfect. I'm Robin May, a journalist, wife, mother, and most days, a faith-filled Christian.
And I'm Denise Bickle, a clinical therapist, educator, mom, Mimi, and spirit-filled follower. As recovering perfectionists, we promise to be transparent and real and to share the wisdom of trusted advisors and guests.
So pull up a chair and have a seat. There's always a place for you at our table. Welcome back to another episode of The Problem with Perfect. Hello, Denise.
Hello, Robin. How are you?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I'm sort of living in this afterglow right now. For our listeners, a couple of weeks back, we did an episode about the women's conference that I was helping coordinate in Columbia, Missouri. And the episode was about Melody Perry and the legacy and how she started this conference and how I just felt led that we needed to keep it going. So all of that to say that I am exhausted and exhilarated all at the same time, because the conference was last night. Every seat was sold out. So 600 women came from over 70 churches. And that excites me so, so much, because I just love the picture of like women from all different walks of life, different stages of life, and 70 churches coming together to worship, to have community, and it was just amazing. And in fact, I was the MC for the event. And there were a couple of times where I was like, okay, like, you know, I was like doing every technique that I had to not cry, because I was just so moved by what God did and how big and how he showed up. And I was incredibly inspired by our speakers, and the music was amazing. So I could go on and on and on and on, and no one wants me to do that, but it was an amazing event, and I'm just so feel so lucky to have gotten to be a part of it.
Oh my goodness. Well, and think about this. Imagine if those women from 70 different churches go home and replicate. Yeah, let's do that in our church, in our community. I mean, the ripple effect, I have no doubt, will be exponential.
Yeah, I know. And of course, you know where my mind goes, Denise.
Yes. How can you put it all together and make it into a package that you can get people to duplicate it in your spare time?
Yeah. How can we help people do that? Or if 70 churches were there, what if two more people from each of those 70 churches came next year, you know? Yeah. How could we reach more people and just, you know, but bigger isn't always better. And for now, I'm just going to be really, really thankful for the experience. And I get emotional. Yeah. It was just, it was that good. It was that good. It was just like one of those, I'm sort of speechless about it, because it took my breath away. It literally, when I got up there and looked out over this room of people, like, and you know, when you start planning something like that, you just have to trust that whoever God desires to be there will somehow get there. But just seeing that come to fruition, literally was breathtaking.
Yeah. Don't you know, Melody was just smiling. You know, she had her hand in that too.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. And it's funny that you say that, because you didn't see this video, but we did a video tribute. And that is how the tribute ends, is me saying, I know that Melody is smiling with us tonight.
Oh, of course it is. I think I did see the video, didn't I? Like, it's different people talking.
Yeah, on Facebook. It was. Okay. So you saw like the short version, and we showed the big, the full version. Yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah.
But also just so lucky to work with women who we all have different skills and different gifts and talents. And when God brings a team of people like that together, you can just stay in your lane, do your thing, do what you're good at, and let other people in confidence do what they're good at. So, I mean, it's that sort of like cheesy, you know, teamwork makes the dream work, but it really kind of does.
Yeah, I'm thinking if you build it, they will come.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point. And I never really worried about who would come. I really didn't. I just felt like, if there's 100 people there and they want to be there, great. There's 250, great. There's 500 there, and then when we sold out, I was like, oh my gosh, Lord, you're just knocking my socks off. So,
There you go. Was Fred there? Did he get to
oh
see?
yes.
Oh,
Yeah.
good. Good,
Shout out
good,
to
good.
Fred, because we really couldn't have done it without him. Like he was like behind the scenes with the ticket sales and just his experience in putting on conferences logistically was so important. So,
Yeah, well,
and then also Nick was there, one of Melody's sons. So it's so good to see him, and he was a great help as well. So yes. So, but
you.
I yeah, exactly. Big exhale. The theme of the night was breathe. So
Yes.
yeah. So here we are. But I'm excited to be with you today and excited to talk about our topic.
Me too, but before we move to that, will there be an opportunity for people? Is it going to be a link to a Zoom or the
Yeah.
people that couldn't be there, like, oh, me, that we could watch
Well, to
it?
be continued, it was recorded. So we're trying to f figure out if we'll just give access to people who really wish that they could be there. Like, one of my dear friends was all excited about the conference and tested co positive for COVID yesterday. So, people like you and her, and then other people I think that just went, maybe a friend went or a family member went, and now they're like, man, I sure wish. So to be continued, but remind me. So
I
remind
will. I'll put it on our list.
me. Okay. Perfect. All right, Denise. So what are we going to talk about today?
Ooh, boy. Yeah, we'll start with a disclaimer first. Our topic today may be triggering for those who are experiencing grief. Please know we are with you in spirit. If you find the topics are disrupting your peace of mind or creating emotional hardship, please reach out to a trusted friend or a support network. It's also okay with Robin and I if you just don't even listen to this podcast, this particular episode. Turn it off, go do some self-care, and we'll look to see you again next week.
Yeah. Well, today's segment of What to Know Before You Go, it does focus on the ubiquitous emotion of grief. And grief, unfortunately, is unavoidable, regardless of whether the loss is due to a death or divorce, debility, aging, illness, pretty much all aspects of the human experience here in this broken world. So today we're going to be exploring several types of grief. And each is associated with various life events, which I think is really important because I think no matter who's listening, probably you'll be able to identify with a certain grief that we're going to talk about.
I agree.
And we will be discussing chronic sorrow, anticipatory grief, grief, and complicated grief. We will also be offering coping techniques and strategies to move through the grief process, which is super exciting. So we're going to unpack what those are, but we're not going to leave you there. We're going to give you some insights for moving forward. And I just have to say that on episodes like today, I am so excited and so thankful because it's great when your co-host happens to be an expert on these subjects. So, Denise, I just so appreciate and love having your lifetime of experience in end-of-life care, as well as a doctorate. We don't talk about it often, but you are Dr. Denise Bickel. And so you're more than well qualified to be the expert on this topic. But beyond that, I know your heart. So it's that combination of your education, your experience, and your heart that just makes me excited for this conversation because people get to see all of that today. So thank you for your willingness.
Oh my goodness, what beautiful words. Well, let's get right to it. I think we can safely start with chronic sorrow. This is a theory that came out of the nursing profession, and there is a formal definition for it, which I will read. Chronic sorrow is a periodic recurrence, a permanent, pervasive sadness or other grief-related feelings associated with ongoing disparity resulting from a loss experience. So that's a huge definition.
Yeah, unpack that.
Well, I will. Thank you. Basically, what it's saying is it's a normal reaction to an abnormal situation.
That's such a much better definition. They should pay you
for
that.
So a lot of people don't even realize that chronic grief is something that all of us probably experience at some time in our lives.
Yeah. Well, can you give us some examples of situations that might result in chronic sorrow?
Sure. Yeah, I'm thinking of a woman who had a massive stroke and she was no longer able to be independent, couldn't walk, couldn't speak anymore. She wasn't going to die from her illness, but her symptoms were so debilitating that the person that her husband and her family and her friends had known was really gone now. And so grieving the loss of all of those things, grieving the loss of a partner, even though she was still there, grieving the loss of your mother who's there but isn't able to really communicate anymore, those kind of things, those family members were experiencing chronic grief. Another situation would be maybe a child that was born with disabilities. Because we always are so excited to have a baby. And the expectation is we're going to have this beautiful, healthy baby. And you do get a baby, but it may not be the baby that you were expecting. And so when all the other kiddos are riding their bikes in the cul-de-sac, your child is not. When they're going to school, your child is not. So it's parsed out in bits and pieces throughout someone's lifetime. I had a friend who's, we were talking about our children going away to college, and she said, well, you know, my child's never going to leave home.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And that's chronic sorrow, that they're not going to meet those milestones. They're not going to graduate from college, things like that. So those are some examples of chronic sorrow. There's a beautiful poem that was written called Welcome to Holland, and we will put that in the show notes for folks. And I think the most important part of it is that chronic sorrow prevents us from grieving fully because it's ongoing. So it's just periodic episodes of re-grief and chronic grief. And the fact that there's no time frame or timeline. You know, when someone has a serious illness, oftentimes we have an idea of when grief may occur. And with chronic sorrow, it's just becomes part of someone's life.
Oh, gosh, that sounds terrible. And even in saying that, I know that, you know, there's been a part of my life over the last 7 years. I think that I can identify with that in some ways.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But we are going to talk about how to help with this at the end of the episode. Is that right?
We are.
Because
even though there are different types of grief, grief is so very universal. And so what works for one grief works for another grief. You know, we don't have to figure out specific things for each type. Although I do have some resources for a couple of types, so we'll put those in the show notes.
Okay. Well, before we move on to the next type of grief, I do just want to ask, so does this type of grief, chronic sorrow, as you call it, does it ever get, I want to say, does it ever go away? Does it ever get better?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a, you know, it's what I'm thinking, what I'm wondering, but it doesn't sound like it is, because it will be there as long as the situation is there. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And quite often, chronic sorrow isn't something the person may be able to express or even understand, but the family, the caregivers, you know, they're who are experiencing it. And it is, it's as long as that situation remains.
Yeah, it just reminds me a little bit of the conference last night about how we all need hope and how hope is so critical. And it feels like what we're talking about are those situations that they're not entirely hopeless, but like the fact that, your child won't ever get to go to school. There's no like hoping that someday that's going to turn around and that he or she will be able to do that. Like that's just the reality of the situation, and it's an abnormal reality. And so it's a constant like pulling off the band-aid or opening up the wound or pouring salt in it or adding fuel to the fire, however you want to say it. But it's like you can't avoid that.
No, you can't. And the other part of it is, other people out in the community may not even know why you are so sad because they may not know your situation or what's going on. So it's a very lonely, type of grief to experience for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on and talk about anticipatory grief.
All right. Well, anticipatory grief is a bit different from the chronic sorrow in that it starts at the time of, we'll say, a diagnosis. So when someone is diagnosed with stage four something, patients and caregivers, family members, whomever, they start anticipating the loss of that person. So it really is a forewarning is the key word. So people have learned that this is not going to go well. And so you start losing that person piece by piece as they're going through treatment or as they are having surgeries or whatever. And it really becomes a waiting game because you know what the end is going to be. But you're in this emotional limbo where you kind of judge it with the AC, BC, for cancer, after cancer. And certainly, anyone, anticipatory grief if someone has Parkinson's disease, if someone has a chronic illness that is going to be life-threatening at some point. So that's the premise behind anticipatory grief. And part of the challenge with that type of grief is just the waiting and the seeing and not knowing, the not knowing. And if we have an opportunity to prepare, typically that grief is softer because you did get to say your goodbyes, I'm sorries, I love you, please forgive me, all those things that are so very important to be able to say. And so it's a gift, quite honestly, when we know we have some time to do all those things, put things in order. But it's also very difficult. And there's a family that I'm working with right now, and it's their anticipatory grief is around the fact that their parents have been married for 75 years. Her father is 92, her mother is 91. And they still live alone in their own home. And yeah, however, that's not really the safest environment for them. And so the grown adult children who are as old as I am are trying to figure out, how do we help them adjust to this and how do we prepare them for the fact that this just has to change. So those kind of things are all surrounding anticipatory grief.
Yeah. So much of what you said just resonated with me on different levels and in different examples. And I think it's a God wink that you brought the one up that you did because, yeah, I have a lot of friends whose parents are aging. And my mother-in-law included. And so when you said you lose the person piece by piece, it's just so true. But I think even in that, there's still this desire to avoid the inevitable, to not think about the inevitable. So I think there's this tension between we know it's coming, right? Because we all get the same outcome in this world, right? We all do. 100% chance of it. But yet, still, this like we see that we're losing them piece by piece, and we instinctively know that we're grieving. But so I think that for some people, putting a name to that, like what you're feeling is anticipatory grief. And what you said is that it can actually help the process on the other end, which I think people need to hear because Let yourself feel that.
Yeah. And quite often, the person who has gotten, received that diagnosis, they want to talk about things like, I'm sorry, forgive me, here's the bank account number, whatever. Mm-hmm. And families have a tendency to like, no, don't talk like that. And so it gets to be this, the proverbial unknown that everybody wants to talk about, but in different ways. And so it's just, if you can allow your loved one to talk about all those things, it makes it easier for them and for you. It's just that it is a difficult conversation to have, and it's ongoing, you know. The other side of anticipatory grief that I think can be really difficult is it's so important to remember that the patient is saying goodbye to everyone they know. The friends and family are just saying goodbye to one person. And so the exhaustion of saying goodbye and maybe repeatedly, you know, which is fine. If you get to say goodbye four times, that's great. But it is difficult for both parties.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other example that came to mind is on Monday of this week, it was the funeral for my 42-year-old niece. So she's married to my nephew, and you know, she knew she was dying. It became very, very evident. But I just, as hard as it was, she got to talk about her funeral and what she wanted and what she didn't want, where she wanted her final resting place to be. What did that look like? You know, conversations that 42-year-olds don't have because they're 42. But she got to have those conversations, and she got to, you know, tell her kids, I'm always going to be with you. Just my physical body will not be, you know, just those really important conversations. And I'm sure it made the actual losing of her and the loss of her better, although still gut-wrenching. Yeah.
I'll say, yeah. Well, and I'm glad for her family's sake that they got to have those conversations too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So well, one of the things, and we'll put this in the show notes as well with the Welcome to Holland poem, there is a book that I strongly recommend to people who reach out with those kind of situations. And it's called Smiling Through Your Tears, Anticipating Grief. And gosh, anytime I go to Goodwill, if there's copies, I pick them up, or Amazon should be paying me for telling everyone to go to Amazon and get that book. But it really is a wonderful, almost a primer for the experience. So here's what's happening. Here's where you are. Here's where your patient or your loved one may be. The family whose parents are still in their own home, she reads a chapter a week, and then we talk about it and I think normalizing grief is so important. Mm-hmm. So I like that book a lot.
Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, I think there's a lot of people in a lot of different situations, mm-hmm. but at the heart of it is anticipatory grief. So great suggestion.
Yeah.
Okay. So how is anticipatory grief different than, I just want to say, just grief? And I'm saying that in air quotes that no one can see, but how are those two different?
Well, anticipatory grief is in anticipation of, and typically generalized grief is at the time of death. And so certainly it's a different in many ways, but one of the most significant ways is if you haven't gotten to have all those conversations, you haven't gotten to have, I'm not even sure that, I don't think that's proper English, but if you did not have an opportunity to say all those things that we talked about in anticipation, then grief can really be another emotion that's very difficult to process. And the other side of grief is that it's not always loss. It can be a divorce. It can be a loss of employment. So many people with COVID who have what they call long COVID now, mm-hmm. they've experienced a lot of loss in that they're not able to work anymore. And so you have to grieve that person that you were. So it's not always about someone being gone. Sometimes it's just, you have to grieve this what you're sitting in, as we like to say.
Yeah, exactly. Because it is. I mean, I think about the things that sometimes that I grieve, like I just wish things were different, and so when I have to let go of what I thought was going to be, when I have to let go of my ideal, something that never even happened, but it was just something that I was moving forwards and something that I wanted. It was a goal. It was how I envisioned life would be, and letting go of that.
Well, and not to use you as a case study, but I will. Think about when you had been training for months for the bike, and then that was just pulled out from underneath of you. There was definitely some grief around
There
that.
was, and you hated to make a big deal about it because it's just a bike ride, right? But it was bigger than that because it was connected to some personal goals. It was connected to my passion for the V Foundation and our experience with cancer. So, yeah, that's a great example. And also interesting how I wanted to minimize my grief.
Yes, you did. You just wanted to scoot on by. The other thing about just generalized grief that I think is really worth talking a bit about is that, everybody's always heard, or most people have heard about, the stages of grief by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And I always think of the acronym DABDA. Starts with denial, goes to anger, then bargaining, and then depression. And finally, acceptance. And that was a really widespread, socially acceptable description of the grief process. However, what happened with those five stages was that people thought it was linear. So they started out with denial and then they worked through the, anger, bargaining, blah, blah, blah. And then when they were, okay, I have acceptance, I'm done now. And that is not how grief works. And it's just so much more fluid, and you come in and you come out. And, one of the things that I tell people that are grieving, and I always feel like, wow, Debbie Downer, good on you, Denise. But quite often, people are so worried about the first holidays, the first milestones that they're going to experience without their loved one. And it can actually be the second or third or tenth one that really hits them hard. So grief is not linear in any way. It really is just two steps forward, one step back, that sort of thing.
I think that's a really important note to make because the book, The Five Stages of Grief, right? It's an easy read. Everyone should read it if it's the same book that I'm thinking of.
I think so.
But the whole idea that you can weave in and out and this is something I wanted to ask you. So I have some really, really exciting, amazing, wonderful, huge life events that are coming up, right?
Yes.
Yes. And as excited as I am about those, there are times when it just hits me and I am so, so sad because I would just love my mom to be here to experience them with me. And I don't know where that fits in the five stages. I mean, I don't think I wouldn't call it depression, but I call it sadness. Like there's just a heaviness that, and then I can go, okay, and then quicker, I get to acceptance quicker. But there's just always, I think, going to be times in life whenever that grief still hits me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think most people have that, and that's the thing about grief is that it is ongoing forever. It does get better. They talk about, grief is not something that you get over, you get through. And I like that passing through the tunnel better than, get over, because that just doesn't happen. And even with things that aren't grief related, even trauma events can trigger someone when they see something or hear about something devastating. It really can just suddenly bring you back to, oh gosh, I remember that day that we got that call, kind of stepping through all of those things. So, again, grief is just so ubiquitous, and everyone is going to have some experience with that in their lifetime.
Well, one of the things that you told me that will always stick with me, and I think about it in those times of sadness and loss, like, oh, this would be so much better with my mom or my dad. I think, you know, this is what it feels like to, this is the, like, the price we pay. It's a small price to pay for being so loved and so cared. And then it does make me feel better. Like, oh my gosh, I was so lucky to be so loved.
Yes, and
And it still hurts.
exactly,
Yeah.
and it still hurts, and it's things are going to come up unexpectedly that you wish they could be a part of, or things like that. You know, holding both things as possibilities.
Yes, holding two emotions at the same time. Yeah.
Exactly. Look at you. You're going to be a therapist, you know, before we know it.
Well, you know, I have to tell myself that frequently, you know, like this is what I'm feeling, and I'm feeling this. They're both true. Sometimes they're very different. Yeah. So, well, thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. So then we get to our last category, which I'm just like scratching my head because all of it sounds complicated to me, but there is a specific category of grief designated as complicated grief. So tell us about that.
Yeah. You know, typically complicated grief is associated with trauma or an accident or a suicide where you don't see it coming. It just comes and, you know, just knocks you off your feet. And especially with things like a death by suicide, it just leaves families with so many questions and unanswered, and all the whys and the when and how did it get to this? People who lose someone in an accident, you know, they didn't get a chance to do any of the things we talked about. They didn't get to be prepared ahead of time. They didn't get to say their goodbyes and their I'm sorries. And so, for those folks who are grieving a complicated grief, it typically requires extended therapy, because you know, and really with generalized grief, usually about 6 months, people are like, okay, yeah, I see now what you meant. I'm getting through it.
I can breathe again.
I've got the tools. Complicated grief is much more difficult. And so trying to be comfortable with the unknown and the not knowing and all of those questions that are left behind when someone dies suddenly and unexpectedly is very difficult for loved ones to experience. I had a client one time who said he described his grief as, I feel like I had open heart surgery without an anesthetic. And I think that's just so true.
So
So
there's
very
nothing to
true.
prepare you for it. Yeah.
Yeah, not at all.
So I have two things I want to ask about this complicated grief associated with trauma. So that trauma doesn't always lead to death, right? We can very much experience trauma, have experienced trauma, and here we are. And so I think that there's a lot of us that have probably experienced complicated grief based on this trauma that we experienced either as a child or an adult. So I think that was important to note.
Absolutely. And the trauma experience can resurface at any time. And even hearing about, so maybe your loved one died by suicide, and then you hear about another family who's experienced a loss through suicide, you remember that. Oh, I remember when that happened. In my family, my brother died by suicide. And you know, just it can take you back to that moment, that phone call, that what in the world, why did the, you know, just all of those things are just right back, just like that when you hear it. So, and it doesn't have to be you. It's just that you experienced that and it re-grieves you for a little while. But each time that grief is in our lives, we gather more tools. We have that experience to fall back on what worked last time. How did I get through this when this happened before? Who do I need to call? What do I need to do? You know, we develop coping techniques as part of getting through the grief process.
I sure hope so. You know, I think that sometimes people don't develop coping techniques. You can tell me if I'm wrong, because you're the expert. I think that the technique is, let's just avoid it and act like it didn't happen and not talk about it and not deal with it, and then be surprised when there's impacts in relationships and other aspects of our life.
Right. Well, healthy grieving is what we're talking about here today.
Okay, that's a great distinction. Also, my second question about this was, I'm thinking of somebody who I love very much, who, when I think about her grief, it's so complicated. It's so complicated. And also, it's more than just complicated. Like, when I look at what she's experienced, it's like she had some anticipatory grief because she was losing that person a little by little after an accident. Right. But then thought, okay, this is going to be our new normal. And then, through a very complicated procedure, surprising procedure, I guess is the word, you know, that person ends up dying. And so I'm just thinking about, not only is it complicated, but it's so many of these things too. So I love how you're kind of helping us recognize these different griefs that happen in our life and other people's lives, but it seems like sometimes you get more than one of them.
Oh gosh, yeah, you know, for sure. So if someone is diagnosed with a life-limiting illness, you start grieving with anticipatory grief as they get. If they decline and their death is becoming more imminent, people again, you know, saying goodbye, I'm sorry, all those things, and then they're gone. So then we're grieving the loss of that person. But depending on what the nature of the loss is or how that loss experience was witnessed, you know, you just pretty much described a client that I have that is not that person that you're talking about, but they had multiple layers of things happen and resulted in just traumatic loss and traumatic grief and complicated grief. And yeah, and it's layer upon layer. So that's what therapy does, is sort of peel, not sort of, peels those layers back so that you work on it sort of a piece at a time.
Which I think leads us perfectly, right, into,
Yes.
are there some specific tasks, or are there things that people can do to practice working through their grief? Because I do
Yeah.
love that idea of working through, because life is such a journey, right? And I think that there are times we're going to have to work through the grief, and you might then, you know, be on an open road and feel like, I got this. And then you take a turn, and gosh, you got to go through the grief again. So help us do that.
All right. Well, sure, that's easy. That's a really good question. I think, you know, whatever works for each individual person is what helps, because you can't trademark this is exactly what you need to do and you'll be successful. So it really is up to the person. It depends on what type of loss they experienced. I think most importantly is to give yourself and others around you grace. Again, everyone's going to grieve differently. Men grieve differently than women do. We often forget that little ones may be grieving the loss of someone special in their lives, so including them. Sometimes people have trouble sleeping or eating or concentrating. Either they do none of it or all of it. You know, that's all they can do. And so, you know, just trying to eat healthy, get rest, take breaks when you need it. You know, activities like drinking too much, substance use, risk-taking behaviors, those actually just prolong the process rather than help you get through the process. So that's something to think about. Metaphysically, grief is held in the lungs, so it's not unusual for people who are grieving to have respiratory infections, bronchitis, even sometimes pneumonia. So being aware of that. And then I think the other part of it is caregivers certainly would benefit from getting a checkup. Go to the doctors, make sure they're okay, because oftentimes the caregiver's well-being is pushed to the side as they're caring for someone that they love. So all of those things I think are very important. There are online support groups that you can go to, which sometimes people really like that because of the anonymity and the fact that, even if you go online at 2 in the morning, there's probably going to be somebody on there to chat with at 2 in the morning. Online telehealth, Psychology Today, you can go there and look for someone who specializes in grief. Shameless plug. I am licensed in Missouri and Colorado, so I can see clients in Missouri who might be interested in grief counseling. But just at the bottom line, be kind to yourself and be kind to others, because sometimes we can be judgmental about how someone's going about something, and yet in reality, it's just how they're coping, and that's okay.
Yeah, and that's okay. Yeah. Well, so many Deniseisms came to mind when you were talking, things that you've taught me that have been really helpful along the way. One of them was advice you gave me when Tom and I were. We were grieving Matthew's illness, and you told me that I should consider, you didn't tell me what to do, but you said I should consider having more sex than I want to have and drinking less wine than I wanted to drink. And I think it's all born from, exactly what you said here, and it was good advice.
Well, thank you. My mother listened to the podcast where we talked about this once before, and she said, "You didn't really say that, did you?" And I said, "Yes, I really did say that." And I've said it to other people too. So, and the
Yeah.
idea there is just that grief can be very separating, and people can turn inward and not reach out to their loved ones, friends, family for support. So, doing things that, keep you engaged, which not just sex, but just that you're turning to the people that you love for support is really important.
Well, and it does feel isolating. And like you said, women and men grieve differently. So you might have the same loss, but it might look different, might feel different. And so I think it is easy to lose that intimacy because your expectation is that someone would grieve the same way that you do.
Right. And they really don't. Men and women, as in so many different walks of life, men are doers. So quite often they process their grief by mowing, hammering, cutting wood, painting, washing the car. Years ago, when my brother died, I was down at my mom's house, staying for a few days. And so when she finally got up in the morning, she said, "Where's your father?" And I said, "Well, he went to work." And she was astonished and somewhat very unhappy that he had gone to work, but that was how he coped. So, again, just being very gracious and kind to yourself and to others as you're going through the grieving process. And to know too, again, that year 2, year 5, year 15 may be harder than year 1. And so when that happens, go back to the things, journaling, reaching out, support groups, talk therapy, whatever, to remind yourself of how you got through that prior and how you can work through it again.
And just imagine if I hadn't gone to therapy when my mom died, where would we be, Denise?
I don't know. I would be in Colorado. And I don't know.
We
Yeah.
wouldn't be doing this podcast together.
No, we wouldn't. But
So.
I'm glad. I've always felt like your mom brought us together. And I'm sorry that of all the people that I did meet working at Missouri Cancer, I didn't get to meet your mom. So I've really gotten to know her through you and Madison's CD that she made for the funeral and your family. It's been an honor.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you because so many of the techniques and the coping mechanisms, the healthy coping mechanisms that I've learned have come from you. So thank you because boy, did I not know how much life was going to bring on for me to need them. And I think that's the point. None of us ever do.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So, on that note, let me end today's episode with a poem by Fran Solomon, the founder of hillgrief.org. Grief. For those of us who understand, no explanation is needed. For those of us who do not, no description. as possible.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. We're honored you're sharing your day with us.
Do you love a good book? So do we. So join us for the Problem with Perfect Book Club. If you'd like more information about what we're reading this month and how to join us for the virtual discussion, please email us at theproblemwithperfect@gmail.com. Or if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, use that same email, theproblemwithperfect@gmail.com, to send us your ideas or feedback. We love hearing from you.
And if this episode has been helpful, please share it with a friend or a family member who might find it encouraging. Secondly, we would love for you to leave a review on Apple or on Spotify. It's only going to take you a few minutes, but it will really help our podcast grow. And while you're there, make sure you've subscribed to the podcast so you never miss an episode.
As always, a special shout out to our editor, Jordan Overkamp, for making us sparkle.
And remember, there's always enough grace for you today, so be sure to give it to yourself.